to do that because God is faithful to make me make a lot of mistakes when I'm going to speak on this subject so that I can make you feel better about yourself. Let's hope I fall down or something. Wouldn't that be fun? Last year I was here with you and I love being here with you, but this is more fun because last year I got to speak on depression. And even though I think it's a really important topic to understand the concepts of postpartum depression, anxiety in women, it's not your most fun day at MOPS. So today I'm hoping we're gonna have a little bit more fun. And if you're struggling with depression, I would love to talk to you, and hopefully this topic is gonna help you a little bit. Oop, I'm missing, there we go. So what's wrong with this picture? This is my family and some of our professional photographs we had taken over the years for Christmas. And except for my, I'm running for Republican Senate hairstyle in a couple of them. Nothing's wrong with these pictures. They're pretty good. Everybody's smiling at the camera. We've got some matching clothes on, and we look like a really great, happy family. And you know, you get the Christmas card pictures, and they look like this. And this is perfectionism, right? We've brought a perfect picture to the table. But you know what it takes to get this picture. Let me tell you what it looks like for us. It's something like put your shoes on or no television for 3 days. It's get that lollipop. No, that lollipop is for after. Don't get it on your clothes. Just get it on your clothes. And I am like getting to the place where everyone is bribing the kids, trying to get them to smile. I'm completely crabby and stressed out to get to this moment where we spend 20 minutes with the photographer to get this picture. Can anybody relate? Perfectionism is like that. You may be looking for, you know, a wonderful, perfect picture. You have an image in your mind of what friendship or mothering or faith or marriage looks like, and you're trying to get it to look like that picture. And today we're going to challenge some of those thinking patterns and some of those pictures, because trying to get to that picture, you may achieve it with ease, liar, liar, pants on fire, or you may be putting your family and yourself through a lot of stress to try to get to there. So we're going to talk about that today. What's wrong with this picture? This is one of my favorite family photos we've ever taken. That's my daughter on the left showing you her panties. The one in the middle is my oldest, who's about to turn 13, and then it's my niece and nephew. My daughter Olivia was at the photo shoot, and she was done. She was done, done, done. She crept over to this bench. She's got her little dog with her in her hands, and she's like, I'm done taking pictures. And then the other three kids jumped up and smiled and were cooperative. And this is my favorite picture because it's so much closer to the reality of what it looks like to be a parent. And we'll always remember this one. This was Olivia being done taking a picture, and she's so cute, right? I mean, like, come on. Here's one sentence to take away with you, and it's not on your outline, but think of this picture. There is enough good in good enough. There's enough good in good enough. We can look in the mirror and say, good enough, and there's enough good in good enough. And we can look at our husbands and say, there's enough good in good enough. And we can look at our kids and say, there's enough good in good enough. And we can look at ourselves and say, there's enough good in good enough. I come from a long line of perfectionists. This is my grandmother and her 5 daughters. She had a son as well. This is all of them in their Girl Scout uniforms. She had 6 kids in a span of 7 years, my grandmother. My mom and her brother are 10 months apart. I don't know how that's even physically possible. That was not happening in my house, I can tell you. My mom had this picture in front on her desk for many years, and I just adored it. I think it's wonderful. My mom is the one in the middle here in the white shoes. And I said, can I borrow this? Because I want to talk about perfectionism, and I love this family picture. And she goes, you know what really drives me crazy about that picture? I'm thinking, what? She said, you see that on my leg? I cut myself shaving, and there's a piece of toilet paper stuck to my leg. Would any of you ever have noticed that if I hadn't pointed it out to you? It was originally a 3x5 photo. My mom's been looking at that for 30 years, and that toilet paper's been bugging her. That's perfectionism. That's looking at everybody in their white gloves with their coiffed hair that they had to sit under the blow dryer, and the fact that they're all out in public is amazing, and my mom's upset about that piece of toilet paper. My grandmother's house was immaculate growing up. And when I would go there as a she had 13 grandchildren. We'd come over. She had raked the rugs. She had a rake that was specially for raking the area rugs, and we weren't allowed to step on them because she didn't want footprints on the rugs. So we would come into the room where the toys were kept in the closet, and there was a round rug, and we would have to go like Mission Impossible up against the wall like this to get to the closet without making footprints. And so then my mom kind of took that pattern on. My mom didn't really have the, let's say, quite the, I don't want to say ability, but maybe it wasn't quite as easy for her to create that level of order. But when my grandma came over, you better believe that she vacuumed every rug, and we weren't allowed to walk in the living room till grandma got there because we had to make sure the lines were still in the carpet. I didn't inherit that gene. This is Olivia, who showed you her panties. This is her taking a bath in the kitchen sink next to the dirty dishes. I would like to say that we took this picture to show, look at this crazy thing we did this one time. But I think it was like, gosh, we've been doing this so often, we should take a picture. Because I had a 3.5-year-old, and for me, getting up to the bath to use that perfect like bath cradle thing that I used for my first child was not so easy. But we could finish dinner, throw the baby in the sink. I did clean it first. And then be able to still watch the 3-year-old, and the baby seemed to like it. And so, hey, you know, and I left the red eye in there just to show you it's okay to let go. but because I didn't inherit the cleaning perfectionism doesn't mean I didn't inherit perfectionist thinking. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Whether or not you identify yourself as a perfectionist, we're going to attack some perfection thinking styles that really hold us back as moms, as wives, as human beings. So perfectionism, and this is from the Academy of, some psychology, national, whatever, I forget. I'm not a perfectionist. It's a belief that perfection can and should be attained. So we believe that it's possible, and that's what we should strive for. Perfection in our tasks, in our life, maybe in our emotions as a human being. In a pathological form, perfectionism is a belief that work or output that's anything less than perfect is unacceptable. So a normal perfectionist, you might think of someone like, you know, Martha Stewart, really derives a real pleasure from labors of painstaking effort. You know, these are the PTA presidents, these are the valedictorians, these are the MOPS coordinator maybe, someone who's willing to step in and really loves throwing a beautiful baby shower and gets everything perfect and feels really good about it. But a neurotic perfectionist is unable to feel satisfaction because in her own eyes, she never seems to do things well enough to warrant that feeling of satisfaction. She got everything done, but there's still toilet paper on her leg. And that's the thing that keeps her up at 2 in the morning. Hopefully not many of us can relate to a true clinical neurotic perfectionist, though I think I truly was one 10 years ago, and I've been in recovery ever since. But I think we all can relate to perfectionist thinking styles. Now, some of you are thinking, you know, this is great for some of you, but I'm not a perfectionist. I just, you know, I don't throw baby showers. I don't, you know, I'm not an alpha mom. I'm not a perfectionist. And I want to challenge you and say that perfectionism doesn't always produce great output. Sometimes it's the opposite. Some perfectionists sit and don't do the things that they actually would maybe enjoy because they reject their effort before they've even started. If I can't do it great, I'm not going to do it. Now, I'm not saying you should go out and try to be an accountant when you don't have skills in math. That would be me. But if there's something that you might really enjoy, or maybe you want to put your baby book together, but you can't do it the way someone next to you saw them do it, that's a kind of perfectionism that's holding you back, because perfectionism is the enemy of risk-taking, and risk-taking is the key to authentic living. Trying something, failing, trying again is a great skill to pass on to our kids. And then some of you say, oh yeah, I'm a total perfectionist, I'm fine with it. You know, that's what I do, this is how it needs to be. And good for you, and we need people like you to run MOPS and to run PTAs and to run churches and to do all the great things we do. But I want to challenge you to let go of some of the ways that you think about what perfect looks like so that you can have more freedom in your life and so that you can pass on the great principle of grace to your children. So the first kind of perfectionist thinking that we're going to look at today, The key to letting go of perfectionism, the key to letting go of the anxiety, the stress, again, picture the drive to the photo to get your Christmas photo taken and all that heightened sense of anxiety, what if you can't do it? The key to letting go of that is two things. The first is change your pattern. And I think this is on your outline. Change your pattern. What does that mean? Well, we have all kinds of patterns we could pick. I'm a quilter. I love to sew. It's something that brings me a lot of joy. I brought with you two quilts that I made. Maybe I'm a little showing off because I did show you that I wash my kid in a dirty sink full of dishes. When I first started quilting 20 years ago, I was drawn to really, really difficult patterns. I picked things that were very hard to do. This is an example. All these tiny little squares that have to be lined up perfectly, and a quilter, a really hardcore quilter, will tell you your points have to match. So all your little squares have to match. I cried a lot when I was making this quilt. I got to the very end of it, and one of my perfectionist quilting buddies was like, you know, your things are going wrong. You probably need to redo all your edges. And I sat there and cried because that pattern was no fun. That was not a pattern of joy for me. This quilt over here is something I made last year. This was my gift to myself for Mother's Day. I call it my happy place. This quilt did not make me cry. It's way simpler. It's way more fun, and I think just as beautiful. So part of what we need to do is say, what is the pattern that we want to follow so that we can have joy, that we can pursue excellence, but not a pattern that someone's thrusting on us, but a pattern that works for me, for my family, for my kids, for my husband, for my situation. And then the next thing we want to do is you want to change your thinking pattern. Romans 12:2, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, says, don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way that you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Now, some of you may be all in with God, and you have a relationship with God, and you're walking with him regularly, and this is a great verse to remind us that God is a God that does not expect from you what you cannot give. The freedom in letting God transform the way you think is in Psalm 103. He says, as a father has compassion for his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. He remembers that we are dust. I mean, what a relief, what grace in that statement. God knows we can't do things the way he does. He's not asking us to. He's provided grace for us. We don't have to do that. And if you aren't, if you're new to faith, new to walking with God, not sure if you're sure that God is really out for your best good yet, that's okay too. I still want to challenge you that look at some of the patterns of this world and how they're probably not serving you very well. Let's look at a couple of them. What's wrong with this picture? Here's what our grandmothers kind of needed to look like. They wore pearls and heels in the kitchen. My grandma had coiffed hair. That was what perfect looked like in her culture. Here's what we have to do. Here's a pattern of the world that our world is giving us. And I'm not saying this to judge Gwyneth Paltrow and her trainer or Jessica Alba, but I've read articles where both these women said, I'm just a regular mom. No, you're not, Jessica. Put your bottom back under the water. I don't want to look at it anymore. And if this is what your bottom looks like, it's okay. We can still be friends. But I want, you know, we know that this is a pattern of this world that we see all the time. If you want to be on the cover of a magazine, have a baby and have a six-pack ab in 8 weeks, and we will celebrate you nationally. But this is a pattern that maybe we could say, we're not going to do. Let's talk about some perfectionist thinking styles. The first is should-must thinking. I am compelled by all the things that I must do according to someone else's standards. These shoulds come from somewhere, but they rarely come from God, because God is a God of grace who provided a sacrifice for us so that we could be in relationship with him. We might say things like, I should feel happier. I should feel more grateful as a mom. I spent $20,000 on IVF, and I just want to go to sleep now. Someone take this baby away from me. I'm a bad person because I should feel happier. I should be more organized, or I should be more productive, or I should be more patient. I should make homemade birthday cakes. I should be able to keep this house cleaner than I do. I should be back in my skinny jeans now that my baby is 6 months old or 6 weeks old or whatever it is. These standards, these shoulds might come from your parents, they might come from a pediatrician, they might come from Pinterest, they might come from a blog that you read, but they rarely come from God. And some of our shoulds are great shoulds. And some of them, shoulds are a great slave, but not a great master. We don't want to be mastered by shoulds. And what I find for me personally is should is often a timeline that I've made up. It's a false deadline that I believe I should have attained by a certain time. Or my kids should have attained by a certain time. I should have it more together by now. Who says? Who says I should have it more together by now? The next kind of perfectionist thinking is black and white or global thinking. Something is either all good or all bad. Anything flawed goes in the all bad category. Any of you have little kids that are really hard on themselves? They make a mistake and they're like, and they're like overwhelmed by making a mistake. They're stuck in what psychologists call the narcissistic good-bad split. They're either all good or all bad. Children don't have a real great sense of gray areas. And as we mature, we should learn that you aren't all good or all bad. But we might not say, oh, yeah, I reject anything flawed. How many of you would say, oh, yeah, I reject everything flawed? And yet we might say things like, my marriage is a total mess. This day has been a total disaster. I'm a failure as a mother. I have a story when my daughter was 4 years old. She was a February-born girl. She was gonna go to kindergarten in September. There was no question about that. But at her preschool, they did a school readiness assessment test. If any of you have done sent your kids to kindergarten, there's a standard. They spend 20 minutes with your child and then tell you if they're ready to go to school or not. 20 minutes with your child and tell you if they're ready to go to school or not. So I knew that, you know, good mothers follow these patterns. They pay for these tests. They do these things. So she had been assessed. There was a special night that you came and you heard the expert and they handed you your results, and then they told you if your child was going to go to kindergarten or not, or was ready. Now, my daughter, going to kindergarten no matter what, according to the state, unless I chose to homeschool, which was not going to happen. I love you homeschooling moms out there. I could never do it, and I think it's awesome if you can. I forgot to go to the school readiness assessment assembly. Instead, I went to the grocery store because I'd had a really tough day and my husband was home and we needed food. On my way home from the grocery store, I looked over at the preschool and saw all the lights on and remembered, oh crud, it's the readiness assessment test. I ran home. I literally slid the groceries into the house like a bowler to my husband. I forgot to go to the thing. My husband's like, who also is a perfectionist, I should say, you forgot? How could you forget? Not helpful, honey. And I drove out, and I came rushing in, and the thing is, like, over. There's, like, 10 minutes late, and I come in like this. Now my bangs are messed up. And the director of the school comes up to me, and she puts her arm around me, and she says, it's okay to make mistakes. Let's find your paperwork. And I burst into tears. I was 30. I don't know that anyone had ever said to me, it's okay to make mistakes. Literally, I don't know that my mom ever said, it's okay to make mistakes. If she's listening to this online, because they're recording it, so hi, Mom. She may have said it, but I didn't hear that ever. And I immediately thought, I'm so glad this is where my girls go to preschool, because they're teaching my daughter. That failure as a mother thing really messed me up. It's okay to make mistakes. But all the way there, I'm thinking, I'm a failure. I'm a failure. I'm a failure. I can laugh at that now. I don't struggle with that anymore. And I hope someone in here does, just so I can tell you, it's okay to make mistakes. Global thinking gives a false, hasty label. We see a flaw and we discount the person and the situation entirely. We can even do it to our kids. We can see our children struggling with temper tantrums, and we can become overwhelmed at their flaws and miss all the other good things that we've done because we're worried that we're not doing the right thing for them. And the last style is overgeneralization. We say things always and never statements, like, I always say the wrong thing. My husband never acknowledges what I do around here. I have no power in this household. I have no idea how to discipline these children. One action leads to a false conclusion and condemnation of ourselves. And this is where we have to get comfortable in gray areas. I'm an emotional perfectionist. I would like to be happy all the time. I really would. If God can make me happy all the time, even though I know it's not good for me, that's what I would be, because I don't want to be a sad person. You guys know who heard me last year, I've struggled with depression. So I'm afraid to be sad because I could go down a hole. But I want to tell you, it's possible to feel unhappy sometimes and not call yourself an unhappy person, to get angry at your kids and not be an angry person, to forget something and not be a forgetful person, to have cellulite and still be a fit and beautiful person, to make mistakes and still be an accomplished person. So let's apply some of this thinking and show how it shows up in a couple areas of our life. Let's start with friendship. The perfect friend. This is what I thought being a young mother would look like with friendship before I had kids. That's me on the left after I've had my augmentation surgery. And there's my perfect friend. And this is what I pictured. My perfect mom friend, she would live within walking distance of my house and our kids would be the same age and gender. She would come over and we would bake homemade things together while the kids played on the floor happily with made in the USA non-lead painted toys. And as we talked, we would say, we would find out that we had the same taste in movies and the same taste in books. We read the same things. We liked the same TV shows. That we would parent so similarly, we would both be using Baby Wise and believed in sleep training, because that kangaroo care thing is just, I just can't do that. And as we talked, we would find that we really, our husbands would meet, and they really liked each other. We'd have backyard barbecues, and we would spend time together, and we would speak at each other's kids' weddings, and that's the perfect friend. And you know what? The good news is that she's out there, and this is on your outline, only she's five different people. My perfect friend is now five different people. And the humbling thing is, my image of the perfect friend was basically like a blonde version of me. I just wanted myself cloned. And thank God that I didn't get that, because I would be a train wreck as a human being if my friends didn't challenge me by being different. When I was a new mom, I was so afraid to find out that you were doing something differently than me, because it meant that I was doing it wrong. Because there's a right or a wrong. I joke about the Baby Wise sleep training thing, but I was such a hardcore sleep Nazi with my first child that I was like scared if you were telling me that that was the wrong thing to do. I almost, like, I couldn't handle it. And MOPS cured me, because I sat around the table and saw that people who do it different than me are great. And they help me relax and do things differently. So all or nothing thinking says, I gotta find the perfect friend. But I want to challenge you that we need to find room for our friends' flaws and let them see ours too. My workshop that MOPS International has hired me for is called All My Friends Have Issues, and it's my favorite talk, because I don't have a single perfect friend. I have a bunch of flawed, wonderful, beautiful, fabulous friends who know how crazy I am and love me anyway. Should-must thinking in friendship. My best friends and I, we should share core values. I think that's true. But don't confuse core values with parenting styles. They aren't the same thing. One of my best friends moved out to Temecula. We were on track. We were at the same school. We were MOPS leaders together. Our kids were in the same grades. And then she moved to Temecula and decided to do unschooling. And I'm like, what just happened? That's the opposite of what we've been doing together. But she supports and loves me in what I do, and I support and love her in what I do, and it's not the same. But we have the same core values for our kids, that they would be known and acknowledged, that they would grow to love Jesus, that they would be successful in the way that God made them to be. We believe in honesty and authenticity. Those are core values. But the way we're parenting isn't necessarily the critical thing. And then if we're going to talk about global thinking, I want to challenge you to really accept fluctuations in the friendship at this early stage of your life. Cycles of closeness and space are so normal for the changing lives of young mothers. It's really easy to find someone that you're just connecting and clicking with so much, and you've got your once a week play date planned out, and you always get to do your coffee and you get to talk to each other a certain amount of times a week and feel really safe and happy, and then she gets pregnant and gets put on bed rest and you don't get to see her hardly ever. These are just fluctuations that we go through in early childhood, and I just wanted, and I may just be preaching to myself here, but I just wanted a wife. I just wanted the mom that was going to stick with me, just one woman. I was still looking for that one girl who was just going to be there for me through everything, and that's just not how it goes. And we don't need to cut bait and run away because sometimes someone is not as available to us as they were at one point. People have all kinds of things going on in their lives, so we accept that there are fluctuations in friendships. I now am blessed to say from MOPS and early marriage, I have friends that I've had for 17, 20, 17, 12, and 8 years. And every single one of those, we've had periods where we hardly saw each other, could talk to each other for certain amounts of time. And I'm really glad I didn't go, oh, it's all or nothing. You got to be there for me, you know, once a week, this is our time, or we're out. Let's talk about perfectionism in mothering. I'm going to give you some one-liners to just help you, and the first is that babysitting is cheaper than therapy. I've tried it both ways. Babysitter, good babysitter, $15 an hour. Therapy, $100 to $150. Get a babysitter before you go crazy. Your husband would rather have pizza for dinner than a home-cooked meal with 4 side dishes, and you're one of them. The frazzled, crabby wife. And I have to tell you, I stole that from Little Women. How many of you have read Little Women even when you were a kid? And they said, and there was something in there that, like, the husband was glad to come home and not have a frazzled wife as a side dish. So it's been going on since 1860 that women have been trying to do the perfect dinner and not been very nice when their husbands got home. Next one. Stress over fitting all organic produce in your diet will probably kill you sooner than pesticides. Maybe. Not scientific. And it's better to give your kids 30 extra minutes of TV and take a break for yourself than scream at them because you're worn out from entertaining them. We have these shoulds, the things we have to do that can make us a little bit crazy. I'm not saying you should let your kids watch TV for hours and hours, but maybe we could just give ourselves a break sometimes. You're not a bad mom because you wanted to talk to someone on the phone and they got 30 more minutes of PBS. Or, I don't know, just don't let them play Grand Theft Auto. That's not good for them. The biggest should, I think the should must is the main thing for mothers, the should must. And the biggest should we all fall victim to is I should be able to do it all without help. I should be able to do it all without help. Well, how many of you would raise your hand and say, yeah, I should be able to do it all without help? None of you actually, okay, a couple people think that. None of you would really believe that or stand up here and say, yeah, moms, do it all, do it without help. None of us actually would say that we believe that, but we act that way so often because we don't ask for help. And we try to do more than we can do and maintain some joy. And here's the interesting thing is that we all define do it all differently. And that's talking, when I say that, I mean, we need to look at what is our pattern? What's the pattern that works for me and my family? My mother-in-law used to say that it was so important to her to be the one to pick up my husband from school when he was little because she would pick him up and he would immediately tell her everything that he learned at school. And that was his moment to tell her everything. And she's like, I'm so glad I was present and there for him in that moment. So I decided that that was really important. That's what you should do as a mother. You come and you sit with your child and you're ready for them to just pour out what they wanted to tell you. My daughter didn't want to do that. I would pick up my little girl in like the 4th grade. She's in 7th grade now, and it's going really well, I have to say. Junior high is not as scary as you think it is. We'll talk again next year. She didn't want to do that. She wanted to go be alone for an hour, and then she would come down and talk to me. That's a small, silly example, but some of the things people have told you that you should do might not be what your kids need at all. And if you have more than one kid, especially more than one kid of the same gender, you know they're all really different. And they have really different needs. I read the introduction to this book because I got so much out of it and it was so hard to read that I decided that I wasn't going to read anymore. But I got an awful lot out of it, and let me tell you what I got. This is a great book, I think, called The Good Enough Mother by Brunel Bettelheim, very respected psychologist. I'm not going to read you this whole thing. I just want you to see how dense his prose is. And here's what he says. He talks about the difference between the good enough mother and the perfect mother. So the good enough mother, the perfect mother, believes that, you know, she's got a lot of should musts. She's thinking a lot about herself. And the not good enough mother is what we would call the imperfectionist mother, the mother that knows it's okay not to be perfect. And so he says, here's what happens when you try to be the perfect mother. As the infant looks into the face of a good enough mother, he finds himself. Because the good enough mother, imperfectionist mother, has deep empathy for an infant and reflects his feelings back to him. She's present with him. This is why he sees himself in her face as if in a mirror. The not good enough mother, the perfectionist mother, she fails to reflect the infant's face back to him because she's too preoccupied with her concerns, her worries over whether she's doing right by him, or anxiety that she might fail him. The infant does not find himself reflected in the face of such a mother, but responds to being worried and becomes worried about himself. Worse, he sees the face of a stranger where he should find what is most familiar. Now, if you've been distracted and worried while you're breastfeeding, it's okay. Your kid's going to be okay. I'm not trying to scare you. But I love this principle. What he's saying, and I did read more than the introduction, is that the most important thing we do for our children is to be present and empathetic and learn who they are. And it's really hard to do that when we're thinking about ourselves all the time. And you may think, I'm not thinking about myself all the time. I'm trying to be perfect for him. He doesn't need you to be perfect. He just wants you to reflect back to him who he is, and to love him, and to be present with him. And I'm going to say this even though I'm being recorded. I was raised by a perfectionist mother, and I'll tell you that even today, when she's listening to me, I can see on her face that she's not really listening to me. She's trying to figure out what the perfect thing to say to me is, what the right response is, and that's about her, and it's not about me. And I grew up with that sort of sense of loneliness. So even though she always said, you're great, you're wonderful, what I saw her model was, be worried, be perfect, hide what's wrong with you. To love, listen, and get to know our children, be present with them, I believe is our highest calling as parents. I think that's biblical, and I think psychology and attachment theory shows that to be true. If you want your kids to know that it's okay to make mistakes, then you have to model it for them. And don't you want them to know that it's okay to make mistakes? So here's some ways we can model to our kids, that we give grace to ourselves, and so they can give grace to themselves. Let's talk about some things we need to stop saying out loud. If you want to read more about this, I have a blog on my website called I'm Lame and Other Things I Should Stop Saying Out Loud. I find myself saying things like, I'm lame, I'm stupid, I'm hopeless in front of my kids. It's usually when I've made a grocery list and spent a long time on it and then got to the grocery store and realized the list is still on the kitchen table. I'm so lame. What should I say instead? Oops, mommy made a mistake. Let's see how we can solve it. What can we do? Let's see if I can remember what was on the list. Because if my kid hears I'm lame, they make a mistake, and what do they think? I'm lame. I need to stop saying things like bad mommy. Do you ever say, I had a bad mommy day? And you think you're being like really good and owning your stuff, right? Mommy had a bad mommy day. Mommy had a rough day. Mommy didn't have a bad mommy day. Mommy instead should say something like, I lost my temper, and I'm sorry. Mommy yelled when she shouldn't have, and I'm sorry, rather than bad mommy. How many of you have ever said, you kids are driving me crazy? We had a great speaker in my MOPS group said, never say that to your kids because you've just told them what it takes to drive you crazy. True. But here's the better thing, and this is what you mean. That behavior needs to stop. Do you see how you kids are driving me crazy is a black and white statement? It's your behavior is crazy. You guys are crazy, and now I am crazy because of it. You're not being driven crazy. You've let them push past your boundary, and that behavior needs to stop. Now, you're not going to do that perfectly, but wouldn't you feel good about yourself if you started saying that behavior needs to stop instead of you kids are driving me crazy? I find I say things a lot to my girls like, mommy is overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. I have a lot of noise sensitivity. My girls make noise, and sometimes I just need, I'm overwhelmed, you guys gotta get away from me. And they're older, so you know, I can use words like overwhelmed, and they know what it means. But I've been thinking about how Jesus said, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So what I say is what I believe. If I change what I say, will it also change what I believe? Here's what overwhelmed means. overcome, beaten, conquered, crushed, subjugated, exhausted, besieged, and beleaguered. Sounds like a day at home with toddlers, right? Sounds like kind of how we feel. I need to remember personally that in Christ I'm chosen, loved, empowered, gifted, protected, and I am a conqueror and not the conquered. I don't always feel like that, but I do know that there's power available to me to not be overwhelmed. So instead of saying I'm overwhelmed, I can say out loud the powerful thing that I need a few minutes, I need to pray, and I need to make a list. I find making a list when I feel overwhelmed, like a bad mom, like I'm lame, like I'm a failure, to just write down, this is the things that I actually have to do. Challenge the pattern. What is the pattern for today? What do I actually have to do? Write that down and pray and make a list. I now say to my kids when I'm being my present self, mommy needs a few minutes with God, okay? Mommy needs some quiet time. Give me a few minutes. Instead of, I'm overwhelmed, get out of here, which is not the nicest thing to say. I want my kids to know that they have power and that it's okay to make mistakes. I want them to know that they have power to stop and challenge the things that they feel like they have to do. And I want to talk, just as I close, about a way that we might not think that we apply perfectionism, and that's in our faith, in either taking a leap of faith when we haven't yet or walking with God when we already are living a life of faith. All or nothing thinking in our faith says, I will take the leap of faith when I have all my questions answered. And I have been walking with God since I was 10 years old, and I do not have all my questions answered. I sometimes get terrified to get up and speak because I don't know more than what I'm telling you right now. There are a lot of things that I don't understand about God or about myself. But God's told me get up and talk, so I'm taking a leap of faith that He will fill in the blanks for me. Global thinking says doubt and fear, and this is on your outline, disqualify you from a life with God. And I will tell you that a life with God, doubt and fear will be your constant companions, because God will call you to do things that you don't think you can do, and you will feel afraid. The number one thing that God said in the Bible, when people come and speak, when prophets come or angels come, the number one command in the Bible is do not be afraid. And why is that? Because we're freaking afraid. And we would be crazy not to be, because we're raising eternal human beings and it's scary. And there's a world out there that's scary, and we're trying to do things right, and we're afraid that we won't. So doubt and fear don't disqualify you. They're just a place where we get to lean in to God and say, I don't know the answer. I don't feel safe right now. I'm not sure that I actually trust you. And in my perfectionist self 10 years ago, if I had a doubt or a struggle with God, I'd be like, God, I will be in the closet over here. I don't feel worthy to come in front of you. I'm going to figure it out by myself, and then I'll come back when I've got it together. And that's the opposite of what Jesus said to do. He came when we were broken and lost. Perfectionist faith demands performance and a set of rules and a schedule to follow and a chart with gold stars and punishment or withdrawal from God when we fail. I love what Jesus says in Luke. Let's see if I saved it. If not, I'm going to paraphrase it. He tells the teachers of the law, you experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you will not lift one finger to help them. If you've got a list of shoulds and feel overwhelmed, it's not coming from Jesus, who loves you. He doesn't want you to be crushed by those things. Imperfectionist faith, the faith that I'm trying to walk in, that I want to encourage you to walk in wherever you are in your belief system, is to connect with God imperfectly. On your outline, it allows you to connect with the great, great love God has for you and let that love transform you. Don't let perfectionism make you procrastinate. Do you remember how I said sometimes perfectionists just don't do anything because they can't do it well enough? You can't pray well enough. You don't have time to do your devotional for long enough, the quiet time you used to want to do before you were a mom. Don't let that make you procrastinate, but connect with God imperfectly on your outline and receive His perfect love in return. Anne Voskamp, one of my favorite writers, is quoted on the bottom of your thing, never doubt that there are two kinds of doubt, one that fully lives into the questions and one that uses the questions as a weapon against fully living. I love that. Just one more thing as I close. One more story. There was once a quilt that almost made me give up. When my husband and I were first married, we were living in a little two-bedroom apartment in Eastside Costa Mesa with a little pink kitchen, and we lived right down the store from a little shopping center and a liquor store, and I was making my parents a quilt for their 30th wedding anniversary, and of course, I picked a really hard pattern. This is called an Irish chain, and it's a bunch of tiny little squares, and all the points are supposed to match up perfectly, and that's supposedly the beauty and wonder of this quilt. Halfway through, I got a new sewing machine, and the measurement was slightly off. So as I was trying to sew it together one day, they just wouldn't match. And I got so upset, I threw a little hissy tantrum. This was before we had children. And I threw the whole thing in our kitchen trash can, yelled at my husband, and stomped out the door. Walked to the liquor store on the corner and called my mom from a payphone. This is how long ago it was. There was a payphone. Called my mom and burbled out, "I'm so sorry, I've been making you a quilt. It's a surprise for your anniversary, and I can't get it to go, and I just threw it in the garbage." She's like, "Who is this? What's going on?" And I ruined the surprise. And I was totally overwhelmed again, and I went home, and my sweet husband said, "Maybe we need a hobby with less sharp objects and less math. What do you think?" But he had pulled the quilt out of the trash can, he put it in an opaque bag and hid it for me for a little while till I'd calmed down enough to finish it. And a couple months later, I gave it to my parents for their anniversary, all in pieces, because I just couldn't get to the place to finish it. And I said, "By your 31st anniversary, I'll finish it." And I did, I finished it. Here it is on their guest bedroom in their house. And you know what? It's beautiful. And the points don't match, but it's beautiful. Making me tear up for some reason. And I look back and I think, what was I so upset about? What were all those little things I was trying to be perfect? I almost gave up over that. And this is why I'm crying, because I just want to encourage you as a mom, as a wife, as a follower of God, as a friend, if you're trying to do it perfectly, you're going to give up because you can't hit perfect. And the mistakes that you're seeing on a daily basis with your kids that feel like so much that you want to chuck the whole thing in the kitchen trash can, in a few years, you won't even see them anymore. They're gone. They pass away. The small things that we put so much emphasis on, you'll look back and go, "That was beautiful. I did a beautiful job." I know that you're all doing a beautiful job. Don't give up. Don't give up. Let me pray for you, and then you can have your discussion time. Father God, thank you for covering us in your grace. We don't have to be perfect before you because you are, and you provided a way for us to live in grace.